Okay, welcome back. What I want to do now is begin exploring this idea of the movement of evolution through the Western tradition and evolution through the Eastern tradition. We've laid a foundation that relates to both of them from the story from the Bhagavad Gita. And now I want to relate it to the creative process chart, which is on page 10.1 in your workbook. But for our purposes here, I want your attention up here so that I can just use this chart as a background for what I want to talk about. And I want to go back to Greece and to India to begin. And so what we had in the life of the Greek philosophers was one way of saying it, is the Greek philosophers brought the joy of eternal beauty into the world. That what happened in Greece, in the art of Greece, in the thought of Greece, it is in Greece where the life of the mind, this mental level, first flourished on the planet. Now, it didn't flourish for the masses. It was just seeded with a few. But it was seeded enough with the idea of liberty and freedom in the political arena, in the arena of life, if you will, that shaped the world and everything after, because the Greek philosophers seeded us with the highest level of thought at the mental level. And if we look to India, what we see is that joy was expressed by connecting with the infinite that was within. So in the Greek philosophers, in the life, in the Greek life, things were expressed out into the world in great beauty. And in the path, and the Indian path, was that the beauty and the joy was in touching the invisible infinite within. And so we have basically two different approaches to developing I-ness, to developing the life of the mind, to developing individual consciousness. Because basically up until this time, in both traditions on the planet, all we had was tribal culture. The human personality hadn't developed an I-ness yet. And this is very hard for us to understand because we live in such high I-ness today in our lives. And so it's very difficult for us to even imagine what it was like back then when people didn't have any personal consciousness. It's what we call pre-personal consciousness, before personal consciousness came into being. And so when there's no personal consciousness, you live out of the group soul of your tribe. You live out of the group, you know, the group activities. And it's where things like, oh, we've always done it that way comes from. And so the person who has the biggest club in the tribe, you do what he says, in a sense. And that's, in, you know, that's what we see over and over again around the world. As tribal cultures have been broken up, democracy has come in. And in places in the world where there's still this pre-personal consciousness and tribal consciousness, that what we see is really despotic, crazy leaders who have the biggest club ruling the group soul of their country. And so we can get little glimpses if we look around the world, because there's some of this activity still today, but it's quickly diminishing because the power of democracy and the spirit of freedom now is enjoyed more places on the planet than not. And so that was not the case, you know, 200 years ago. And so this whole movement that's taken place in these last 200 years of the movement into modern life, and it came off the age of reason in the Renaissance in, you know, the 16, 1700s was the beginning of the flourishing of that. So we live in a very modern culture today. And so it's hard for us to imagine what it was like living in pre-personal culture, where the only thing you had to be concerned about every day is whether or not you had enough to eat and a place to live and that you weren't going to be killed or harmed. And that you stayed close to your tribe because the tribe could, the group could protect you more than you could as an individual. You wouldn't even think about going off on your own as an individual. Your protection, your good, your identity came from your tribe. And you didn't even have the word I. The great characteristic about the English language is it has a single I. And that couldn't come into being because the other languages don't all have I's, and their languages are broken up with, you know, masculine and feminine references. And we don't have that for the most part. And so in those early languages, your name was tied often to something of the earth or something of the tribe. And so all of everything that you were, you couldn't even know what you were because the only thing you knew about yourself is what the tribe was. There was nothing separate from the tribe. And so that's was the conditions in up until the time of the Golden Age of Greece and up until when the Bhagavad Gita and some of these teachings started to come in more in India. But it wasn't developed in India to the degree the I-ness came through the Western tradition. What India brought was the path within, the universal light, whereas the West developed the circumstances for the individual light. And one of the ways that Rudolf Steiner explains this that made a lot of sense to me, if we compare the guru system in India, and I saw it so clearly in reading Autobiography of a Yogi again, I saw it with new eyes. We compare that with what happened with Socrates in Greece with his students, is that in India what happened, the way of understanding, the way that thought was given, the way that the life of the ideas in the spirit was transmitted, was that in India, the guru from his guru had lifted up and lifted up to touch spirit. That it was the inside passage, so to speak. And so it's the big right-hand sweep of the creative process chart, the arrow that goes up. They turned away from the world. The stuff of the world didn't matter. This is not it. This is not it. This is not it. They'd look at everything in the world. That's not it. That's not it. That's not it. And they would go inside, and eventually, out of the intention to turn within and give their attention, they found that place of changeless reality. Whereas they would look out, and everything in the outside changed. But it was from the Indian culture that there was a touching of that which didn't change. And that was Brahman. Or what we were showing on the creative process chart is the spiritual plane. So what happened with how that information was passed on then is that the disciple became totally obedient to the guru. And the light that was in the guru, the disciple could be lifted up with. And some disciples, for whatever reason, in the evolution of their own souls, gathered a certain enough light within them that they then could lift up others behind them. And so we have the great lineage of the chain of gurus and how important that is in the Eastern tradition, that you are who you are out of the attachment to the light of your guru. And that's how spiritual teaching was done and is still done to this day. But a very different kind of learning took place in Greece. And in Greece, Socrates, who had begun to, what the Greek philosophers did, they began to ask questions at the mental level. They were asking metaphysical questions about what was happening out in the world. because their focus was how could we bring a better government? How could we see all of this behavior? How could we manage the people of Greece better? How could we deliver education better to those who were ready for education, because there wasn't public education at that time? And so what happens is, the system that happens here is that Socrates has evolved up to this mental level. He's dealing with very, very deep metaphysical principles of thought and reason. But in the students who gathered around him, Plato and Aristotle and the other groups of all of the philosophers that gathered around Socrates, Socrates does something very different. And this is a significant difference in the Western path. Socrates' method of giving what he had received, what had been he had been blessed with in terms of the mental life, he had a sense of I-ness. That's why we know about him today. That his impulse, his inspiration, was not to give it as a light that goes from the guru to the disciple, but Socrates' ground of being was that it's already in his student. That it already existed within the student, and Socrates' job was to ask the questions that would draw it out. So that when it came out, it was unique in the student and lived individually in the student, separate from him. And so what we see is we have the whole fertile development of the Western tradition. And then what happened in the Eastern tradition at about the same time as Socrates is the Buddha comes in to the Eastern tradition, and the teachings of Krishna had gotten watered down. People, the Hindus had gotten way off course and had lost connection except through very specific guru lineages that just went from one person to the other, very small groups, that the Buddha came back in as really a dispensation in Hinduism to bring forth the light of Krishna or Brahman in a new way. And so what we have is that Buddha comes in and is able to speak about the life of the mind, which was what was happening at the same time in history as Socrates and the Greek philosophers. And so Buddha asked the questions of the mind. He had done the other stuff. He'd worked with, you know, he studied with a guru. He was born into great luxury. And he walked in poverty. He went out into the world and he experienced the extreme of everything that was in the world. He experienced the world physically at every extreme. But given that he was born into that Eastern tradition, all of his experiences in the world that he walked through was to understand something greater about himself. And when he got a handle on the power of the mind, and that we had to purify our mind from two great things. We had to purify our mind from that which we were avoiding and that which we were desiring. And so the Buddha developed the royal middle way, and he said that there's a place in us where the what we're running away from no longer has a stranglehold over us, and the desires that we have to protect ourselves and all of the desires of the body fall away. And that royal middle way in the Eightfold Path of the Buddha. And we begin with right view. That we have to go to the highest place in ourself and then look into our mind. And so the whole work of the Buddha was bringing this witness consciousness, the understanding of the witness consciousness, which is what Krishna was doing with Arjuna. Krishna was Arjuna's witness. And so for centuries, just that understanding is moving in Indian culture. But Buddha comes in and says Krishna's in us. That there's a place where we touch that changeless reality, we touch Brahman, and we can use that to witness all of these struggles in ourselves, just like what what Krishna was teaching. So in a sense, Buddha was a great reformation on the teachings of Krishna, brought an infusion of greater light in. Now, granted, I'm making some gross generalizations here, but it's to just paint a picture. We just want to get our arms around this a little bit so that we understand more about what we're going to enter into later on in these classes. So what happens is the life of the mind is developing with reason, with individuality, with high thinking. And over here, the mind on the, in the Eastern traditions with Buddha, the mind is being purified of its lower natures, its desires and its fears. And so what we come to in then scripture, tying this now into the Western scriptural teachings, we go to Moses. And what we have with Moses going up to Mount Sinai to touch the face of God at the spiritual plane is that we have Moses apprehending Brahman that Buddha was touching. We have Moses taking it up and touching the spiritual plane and being given the understanding that there's a universal power and presence, the I am that I am. Those were the first time those words were uttered. And so Moses is the recipient of the first seed of individual consciousness. And of course, Moses lived a lot, you know, lived much before the Greek philosophers. But what we have in that great interaction between Moses and God is the giving of the I am as a universal principle for all humanity, which was the same universal principle that Buddha was touching into later as Brahman, and Socrates was touching into as reason and truth and freedom, ideals at the mental level, and then touching them up in the ideal at the spiritual level. And so what happens is that the whole Old Testament is a story about the seed that was dropped as universal consciousness in with Moses and the Israelites, how the Israelites went back and forth as a tribe because they're tribal culture. Moses had was the leader of the tribe. He had the beginning of his own individual consciousness that was greater than the rest of the tribe. But when he went up to the mountain, the tribe just did what the tribe does. They didn't matter them what he told them to do. He was no longer there, so the power in the pull of the tribe, they just went back to their old ways, even though he told them to do something different. Isn't that what a tribe does? They act as a collective. And the Israelites were a tribe. They were pre-personal consciousness. There was not personal identity. But Moses goes up to the mountain in this pure drop of I am at the universal level was given. And so the whole Old Testament is about how this tribe worked out its relationship to the universal presence of God. The I am that I am. And so what we see all through the Old Testament is this going back and forth in their relationship with God. And every time the tribe got off course, they went back to their golden calves, another prophet would rise up from the, in other words, an individual soul would be formed that could separate itself from the tribal consciousness and touch the universal presence of God. And so with every prophet, as they come back down from the mountaintop, every prophet gives a greater and greater peace into the tribe of what's possible. And that the prophet says, we've got to do this. The people would do it for a while, the tribe would rebel. But over and over time, these are great epic stories of then individuals rising up and working out their relationship with God and then teaching what they were given to teach to the group. And so out of these stories, we find and see the evolution of the foundation that needs to be established for the evolution of individual consciousness. And in the Eastern tradition, all that's happening here is this swirling into universal consciousness, into Brahman. Buddha begins to start to work at the mental level, but there's not individuated consciousness there yet. That the seed of being able to witness your own thoughts, so you have to have at least the thinking level, which so that there's the seeds and the beginning structure of individual consciousness taking place. And so we come to the end of the Old Testament, where the practices had been given, people had to be obedient to the practices. And if they were obedient to the practices, the promises of God were delivered to them. Just like the Buddha taught, if you're obedient to this eightfold path and you do these practices, you will be lifted up off the wheel of karma, which is the law of India, the law of sowing and reaping, the law that what we do is going to come back to us if it's done out of unconsciousness. That's how we would say it today. But if we break the law, something's going to happen. And so these whole periods were just for the law, which is a mental concept. It took centuries and centuries for this concept to come in and develop enough presence in both the Eastern and the Western traditions. And it's no accident that India is the biggest democracy in the world today. In terms of how these two threads start to come together. And so the stage is set. Socrates and the philosophers are pulling the seed of individuality, of thought, of witnessing your own thoughts, of having thoughts in the Western tradition. And the Buddha is developing the practices in which you can witness this battle of the thoughts within. Because in the Greek life, the battle of the thoughts was out there in the marketplace, in the structure of government, the forum, the Roman, and then later on in the Roman forum. And so what happens is that the Eastern tradition, they're doing the work within, the Western tradition, they're doing the work without, but we've raised up a few, relatively speaking, in terms of the population of humanity, a small group of people have been raised up to the mental level. And it took thousands of years of evolution to just get us there. So 500 years later, what happens? The birth of Jesus.